what's over here? What's on top of here? Where's my scissors?
Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Good afternoon. It's the Work Show, and we're in February. This month we spoke with the singer-songwriter Rachel Loschak, who has a new album out after years managing her husband's Gustafer Yellow Gold work and raising two boys. We caught up on a snowy afternoon for a talk about creative work and Valentine's.
Yeah.
Had you had a sense that you were going to move towards music from an early age?
Yeah, well, I started playing the violin when I was 3 and started playing piano when I was 7. So, I always wanted to sing, and I used to beg my piano teacher to let me sing some songs, because at the end of the lesson, if I had practiced, she would switch and she would play the piano and I would sing. But I didn't practice the piano that much because I wasn't so into it, but I really wanted to sing, so mm-hmm. It's a dilemma for me. And so all through that time, I knew that I wanted to sing. And I studied music A-level at A-level, at 18, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. Then I went to university and did a degree in creative arts and specialised in music. And I think even then there was some doubt. And there was at one point when I almost switched my degree to geography and Russian, because I felt like, what's the point in mm-hmm. being an artist? And I think I was really struggling with that. You know, how do you earn a living being an artist, and how do you, what's the necessity of it, and why do I have to do it? And my mum actually gave me a lot of encouragement at that time about art being a huge, important part of community and culture and life, and so I continued with my degree. But then I had all the dilemmas of, like, how do you earn a living as an artist or as a musician? And I when I first moved here, I always had another job, a full-time job. I worked at Christie's doing Photoshop retouching and and for 10 years. I worked as a music therapist for several years. So I always did other things on the creative side, for sure, but they were full-time jobs that I had to be at from 9 to 5 every day. So, and then I would tour. And it was when, it actually when we started to do Gustafur together with my husband, that when we had our first son, that we were able to not work full-time and actually be completely earning a living from music. And it was his music. So it's been 5 years since then, and now I'm starting to get do my own music again. So it's been a journey for sure.
And was that when you moved up here that you would stop?
No, it was when we had lived in Manhattan for 12 years and then we moved to Brooklyn and he was born in Brooklyn and we were on tour at that point most of the year round for Gustafur Yellow Gold. And then we realized that, you know, we drive all over the country on tour and we come back with a baby and drive through the Holland Tunnel, across Canal Street, across the Manhattan Bridge, tons of traffic to Brooklyn, to an apartment that we couldn't afford. So we're like...
There was small on top of it.
Small, yeah, and we just thought, you know, well, what could we find upstate if we were going to rent somewhere upstate? And for the same price we'd been playing in Brooklyn, or considerably less, actually, we found a beautiful three-bedroomed house in Cohonkson in the woods with a saltwater swimming pool and 10 acres of land. And it was just... It was just obvious, and then so we moved up here when Harvey was 1.5.
And during that time, did the music go on hold, or did you kind of keep it inside your music?
It went on hold in the sense that I couldn't tour. Well, I was on tour all the time, and actually, looking back, I could have been doing my own music at that time because everywhere we went, I could have set up concerts for myself too. But it seemed like too much at the time. It seemed that it would be too overwhelming, so it was. And I didn't really have creative thoughts necessarily consistently. I didn't have the space in my life to really sit down and write a song. You know, there were opportunities came up and I did record songs, like one song here or there. I did a song for another family artist, Chris Bellew from the Presidents of the United States. He has a kids thing called Casper Baby Pants. And we got to know him through doing Gustafur. And he asked me to sing on a song, and I really, really loved it. I really enjoyed singing that and felt really proud of it. And then there's another, a family label called Spare the Rock, put out a compilation CD to raise money for science education for girls. And they asked me to contribute a song, and I wrote a song for that and recorded it and contributed it. So I did do things here and there, and I sang on most of the Gustafur things. And I was, at that time, performing on stage with him as well. But then once we had two kids, that got more difficult. And so gradually, and then the second child starts to walk, and then touring at all becomes really impossible. So for the last year and a half, I haven't been touring, and that's when I finally was able to have the space to be creative again myself. Yeah.
During the in between, would you keep singing your songs, or were there new ones trying to work their way out?
Yes, definitely. I think I've always got music going on in my head, and I think it started to feel really frustrating to me that I couldn't build the ideas that were coming into my head into songs. So it was the time last year I was kind of like gagging at the bit to get in the studio, and I recorded with Dean Jones in Rosendale. And so I would like drop the kids off at school in Saugerties and then drive down to Rosendale, record for 5 hours, and then drive back in time to pick them up at 3 o'clock. And you know, last winter was a terrible one for sicknesses, and I had a sinus infection and flu and all kinds of things, and I just, if I couldn't sing that day, we would do the bass or we would do overdubs or something. We just made it work. And then, you know, it was quite a deep experience, really, for me, because it was also a very different way of working than I had with my previous records. I had a band in the city and I played bass, but then I had a guitarist and a drummer. And we played together regularly and we had 3 days in the studio, in a big New York City studio. We'd go in and we would put all the tracks down, and at the end maybe have an hour or two for me to do the vocals. And I felt it was all really production heavy and musician heavy rather than concentrating on the vocals. And I would come back and do overdubs, but it never felt... being very critical, I listened to my older recordings, and I can hear the special feeling in them that we created, but there's also something really magical that I don't feel I captured in that time. Some of the songs got close to it, but on this record, I feel like every song got exactly to where I felt it in my heart when I was writing it. Mm-hmm. And that's because Dean is amazing and gave me the space to just be really personal about the little... It was just the two of us in the room, and there was a couple of songs where I sang the take and then just fell on the floor and cried a bit. Uh-huh. And Dean's okay with that. He put up with girls crying. Even though they're...
And the one about your grandmother, is the She Leapt?
Yes. Up She... there's actually two. Mm-hmm. Up She Leapt is one, and then In the Middle is the other one. And In the Middle... I wrote when she was sick. I lived in New York at the time, and my whole family was in England. And she had cancer, and she was sick. And so, In the Middle, I wrote that while she was sick, and then my aunts had me sing it at her funeral, which was the thing with 600 people. So it's a little bit epic for me, and not very easy at all. So it's been a long time. And then actually, after she passed away, I went to the before the funeral, I went to the funeral home and saw her in her casket. And I'd never seen a dead body before, and it was quite unnerving. And I didn't stay there very long, and I just kind of went in and felt very uncomfortable and then left the room and didn't really have any kind of moment with her. But then a few months later, I had this dream where she was in her casket and she sat upright and opened her eyes. Uh-huh. So Up She Leapt is about that.
Okay.
So it's kind of a jokey, and she was quite a funny woman, so it kind of fits with her character that she might do that.
Yeah.
Sit up straight in her casket and start saying things.
Then did she play a big role in kind of nurturing your creative side, or...?
Kind of. She loved music, and she actually played, I think, the violin. Well, her mother played the violin, and she played piano. And she loved classical music, and she always went to theatre and concerts. And my aunt, her first daughter, is an actress in the West End and has been performing in shows in the West End for like 50 years. Mm-hmm. And she's in Oliver right now. No, not Oliver. She was in Oliver, and she's in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory right now, playing Grandma Georgina. Mm-hmm. So she's in her 70s, and she's dancing and as if she was 20. So it's quite... So it's she's musical, and my grandfather's a piano player. So there was always a lot of encouragement to do music and to take violin lessons and piano lessons. But I was really shy at that time, and my grandma used to push me to come and play for her friends if she had friends visiting, and she would regularly be a little bit just kind of undermining, saying, "Oh, you have to look at the audience while you're singing, Rachel, or you gotta..." Just not making me feel that confident about it, and I was already very shy and not very confident about it at the time. So it was kind of coming to America was a bit of getting away from that and finding my own feet musically without that pressure of being more gregarious than I am in the studio.
And where did the... And were some of these... Were all the songs newly written, or were some of them older pieces being redone? Or?
Yeah. There's three songs that are older songs. The two about my grandma, and then there was one other, Come and Get Me, was a song that was one of the very first songs I wrote on the bass, actually, in the first year or so of writing. And for some reason, it just never fitted onto another record. Mm-hmm. It's one of the only ones that I wrote at that time that I didn't actually record, and because we played it a lot at shows, so it just kind of slipped through the cracks for some reason. I've always wanted to record it, and it keeps coming back into my head. I'd find myself singing it a lot and realize that it was like it's like a little child or a pet that hadn't got enough attention. It keeps coming back to bug me until I finally recorded it, and now it feels fine.
Stepping back to the Gustaver stuff, how did that come about? I mean, or what was your involvement?
Well, Morgan and I have been together since 2000, and we've both been doing our own music independently of each other before then and then after we met. And then around 2004, he put out a record, and I think felt hugely frustrated with the process and the recording, the industry process, and frustration at not really kind of ever getting taking off. And he's also an illustrator, and he had shown me these drawings of this guy that he had created, this guy from the Sun, and he wasn't named or anything, he just had sketches of him and things that he'd done in the last 10 years before that. And he, I said to him, I said, if you're so frustrated, why don't you just stop and just, why don't you do that kid's character, turn that into a book or something, and just don't worry about it anymore. And he did. And then because of our connections in the music world, there was someone who was interested in managing him, and Morgan would go and have a meeting with him, and he'd come back, and I'd be, well, did you ask this? Did you ask this? Did you ask this? Did you ask? And I'd be like, wow, why didn't you ask him this? And then... around that time, I also was doing some... I had done some work with Nora Jones, and she recorded on one of my records, and she did a duet with me. And Morgan had mentioned it to this manager, who immediately, his ears perked up and wanted to meet me as well, and wanted to manage me just for this single that Nora sang on, and wanted to take 40% of the proceeds. I was just like, 40%? I don't think so. So, and this was the same guy he was wanting to work with, and we just realized that, you know, I should manage him and keep the 40% of Gustavo anyway. So, and to my own mistakes or detriment or whatever, I had the duet on my record with Nora, but I didn't feel like I could put myself forward in the music industry based on that, because we're actually quite different artists and have very different styles. And at that time, people tended to pigeonhole me. Whenever they heard that I had a connection to her, they would pigeonhole me as that kind of style and the next Nora Jones or whatever they wanted to say about it, which I wasn't at all. Anyway, I mean, career-wise, nowhere near, but also musically very different. And so I kind of pulled back a bit on that. So at the same time as Morgan felt that change, I was also feeling like I had released 5 albums and also needed a break, and the pressure of making it in the music industry seemed so fickle, and I had people want to sign me and then say that, oh, I was too old, and I was like 32, and silly things like that that just really put me off trying to put myself forward in that industry. So we were both feeling like we needed something new. And then we started doing shows, and actually I had a label in Korea put out my record at that time, and they invited us to come and play. And at the last show, we had the very first Gustavo DVD that has a karaoke version on it, and we showed our hosts this DVD when we were setting up for the show, and they went crazy, and it's like, you have to do that today, and this in the middle of my show. So I did my set, and I did like 5 or 6 songs, and then I got off the stage, and then they put this huge screen up the back and then projected the first Gustavo videos. It was I'm From the Sun and Your Eel, two old, very popular songs. And Morgan stood there and did it karaoke to this video, and we realized that, okay, that's how we do the show. So we came back and started doing shows, and kids started really enjoying it, and families enjoying it, and I just started booking more and more shows, and just kept going. And
how was it booking? You kind of shifting over, or had you been booking for
yourself? Well, I've been booking myself too, but actually it was easier, and I managed in the first few years to book solid like year round touring, and actually I think I find it harder now than I did then. You know, we did it for 3 years before we had any children ourselves, so we had a lot of energy for it. a lot of excitement about it, and things were exciting. You know, there was a TV guy that was interested, and a label wanted to sign it, and things were happening with that a lot more quickly than anything had happened for either of us in our own music careers. So there was a lot of, I was excited to be booking and really. But unfortunately now I'm tired, and I don't think I'm actually a very effective booking person, as it were. Obviously I can do it, but it's really quite a horrible job.
Did you go with the label finally?
We did, but the label, they were under the umbrella of V2, and literally like days before we actually signed the contract, V2 collapsed. But they had already done a sale into Barnes & Noble on behalf of our DVD, first DVD, which all went through. So we had a lot of traction because of the situation, but unfortunately the label deal didn't work out. But in retrospect, that actually was good for us too, because we were free to just keep moving. We put the next DVD out really soon afterwards and had good traction with it, and just kept touring.
Did you have creative input into it, or was it how do you work that in a?
Well, generally, I don't have any creative input into Gustavo. I just do all the management and business side for it. And now we have people working with us. We have a publicist and a marketing person, and we have a booking agency that we've partnered with for the last year or so. But I still do the bulk of bookings, and they're starting to bring in more and more bookings, which is great. But generally, you know, Morgan comes up with all the ideas. Now, I don't have any input into the ideas. I do sometimes guide him if something seems a little off in the when he's doing the storyboards. We kind of talk a lot about the story and what it is about, and he talks a lot about to it with our kids about it, so we all kind of know everything that's going on with it creatively. And if there's something that seems like it just doesn't fit right, then we'll talk about it, and I'll sweetly, charmingly put my voice forward, and sometimes it gets heard, sometimes it doesn't. And then I do sing on, he allows me to sing harmonies on it. But you know, when it comes to my creative process, I can get, you know, it's pretty personal. I think each of our creative processes are pretty personal, and because he's doing more, it's a little bit more fluid. We know how it works, but I have been I've had limited musical
expression
right now. Yeah, so if he tries to say something, sometimes I get quite cross. Like I need. You know, I think that's the thing with working with Dean too, is that, you know, I could have recorded it here with Morgan, but those individual songs that I mentioned that I did in between, I did do with Morgan. And, you know, it's we're close, we work together, we're married, and, you know, with my music, I think I need some space from that. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't offended that I went and worked with Dean, and I think I feel really proud of the record. And I don't think we would have gotten it done if I had been doing it here, because Gustafur always takes precedence. So this made it possible for me to actually get it done, and the strain is definitely felt. But you know, I think it's really important to both of us first to, you know, to be doing something that we love, and you know, financially it could be a lot better. But we're both doing what we love. And I've started to do other things that I love too, outside of Gustafur and my music. And then it's been very important to us to be around when our kids are around. And neither one of us have had to, you know, be at a 9-to-5 job and be gone from 8 till 6, which I think is a huge gift for our children that is invaluable, and much more important to us than any money or success or anything else, really. It's but you know, it's definitely, you know, working, having a 9:30 to 2:30 work day 4 days a week, and then snow days and sick days and everything else, I really, really don't get much time to work.
Just one smell and you will believe. Where I come from, we don't have these. Your brother, one for your sister, in a sandwich or a pretty vista. Mother.
We are speaking with Rachel Loschak for the work show here on WGXC Hands On Radio at 90.7 FM in Hudson, Catskill, and Acre, New York.
The albums you've put out, how have you done that? How does one do that now? Just
How did I do the previous five?
The previous five and the current.
Well, I spent a lot of money that I didn't have. Because you have to. At that time, it was much more common to be on a label. I think now it's much less common and less necessary. But at the same time, I think it is necessary to get the exposure. Because I still. This is my sixth record, and I have, people seem to like it, and I don't think it's musically, I think it's good. I think it stands up musically, but I don't have the tools to market it in any kind of fashion. And there's so many online tools you can use, but it doesn't unless someone loves something and it blows up, which you can't really plan for. It either happens or it doesn't, and I'm not sure, because I know a lot of musicians and artists, and a lot of them. That just plow it and plow it and plow it, and it's not necessary. The quality is not necessarily there, but they put a lot of work into getting it out there, and I don't know if it actually makes any difference. Mm-hmm. I really do think that if someone really loves what I do, then it'll find their way to them, and I can't somehow I can't go out there and like push myself in the way I do. Gustafer. Uh-huh. It's harder for me to do it for myself. But I think that I feel like my music is quite organic, and that if something's going to happen, A, it would have happened, or it might happen, and I can't... Mm-hmm. Unless you have a big machine behind you, it's quite hard to get something really out there. And, I'm not invested in spending hours doing that, because I'd rather be with my kids, or I'd rather be writing a song. And it might be that I never get to a certain level with it. But I feel like it's more important to me to make something special, and the people that get to hear it, I really feel blessed that they do. But in terms of how do you make the record to begin with, you mean financially or process-wise?
Well, that describes a lot of it, but I mean, it's a...
I had a few songs written, and I called Dean, and we booked time, and we just go in and get started. And some songs come more quickly and get done in a day, and some songs, one of the songs I did, I had to re-record like 3 or 4 times before I felt like I really captured what I wanted to capture. And actually, that was the song All For You, which was a cover by Justin Roberts, and it meant so much to me to get it right, that for him to hear it and feel... good about the fact that I had covered it, so I really put a lot of soul wrenching to try to get it right.
And then with the run, how many do you print of this? How do you, how do people then, or is it like books where you do books on demand? Or
no, that's not really cost effective. And there's an argument there because if you're not going to sell very many, then doing it on demand might make sense. But I can't justify, Amazon does a program where you pay $14 to print one and you get a dollar and Amazon gets 13 or something. And I prefer it the other way around. It costs me a dollar to print one, but I sell it for $10 or $15, and that can go back into the paying for the studio time that I still pay for. So I'd rather do it that way around, even though the upfront cost is more. I do it through Discmakers, who are a great company based on the East Coast. They do a great job, and I do all the graphic stuff myself, so I did all the layout and design myself. Morgan helped with that, and my friend Chloe, who has her own graphic design business locally, she gave me some advice and helped me with it. So from the art perspective, I feel like I can do it internally. But pressing copies, it's just you need to get 1,000 pressed, because below that it's too expensive. It's quite a difference in cost. If you get 300 pressed, they're like $3 or $4 or $5 each. But if you get 1,000 pressed, they're $1 each.
And then do you then sell them at gigs? Yes. Or, and do you find other ways? Like, can you get into a record store? Can you... Are there record
stores?
Well,
the only reason to be necessary to get into a record store is if you've got a following in that area that you know that people will come in and ask for you in the store. Mm. It's a bit of a catch-22. And the thing that I find is I sell them online, so people that want them online can get them. And then I sell them at shows. And then I have sold a few to libraries. And from doing the Gustafa stuff, we actually have connections at loads of libraries. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things on my list to do is to write to all our friends in all the libraries, and hoping that most of them might want to stock the CD. And actually, one of them did already, but it's finding time to write to all the others to get them to. But that's a good way to do it, because libraries to have it in their catalog, and then they just keep them there. They don't. Yeah. It's good. And then people can listen.
So you'll be playing the concert coming up. What day is that?
That's Sunday, February 16th. Yeah.
At the Kleinert.
At the Kleinert Gallery, yeah.
And then from there, do you have other...
We're hoping plans? To play a show in April at BSP in Kingston. And I'm hoping to host an evening there of goddess music. And I did a house concert last year here called a goddess house concert and a goddess art night or something, and I had some other friends perform and some other women read some poetry, and a friend, a local artist, Kelly Bickman, she presented some of her work at that evening, and I really enjoyed bringing all these women artists together, so I'm hoping to do that again in April. And we just started talking to the people at BSP about that. And our booking agent has started booking me too, which is great. So she talks to them about Gustafa, then she'll, when it's appropriate, she'll talk to them about me as well, so that Morgan and I can go together. And I could do an evening show and he could get up, be with the kids, and then I'll be with the kids while he does a Gustafa show the next morning. So that's actually starting to work out pretty nicely. But I'm not really comfortable doing any extensive touring at the moment, because it's just not practical. I would love to, and I know that a lot of mothers do, but we travelled so much with the kids when they were young, and I really feel burned out of that. And if an opportunity comes up that is a flight, then I would go and do it on my own. I don't want to take the kids with us on the road again. It's not really fair to them. Mm-hmm. It's more than is necessary in a small person's life, I think, if you can help it. If I can help it, I'd want to avoid that. But
what will be the instrumentation on stage?
On Sunday at the Kleinert, that will be, I'll be playing bass and Morgan will be playing acoustic guitar. I think Robert Burke Warren is going to join us on 12 string on a couple of songs, and another local friend, Jennifer Bennett, is going to sing, and Kirsten is going to play flute, alto flute, on a couple of songs, and possibly Gabriel is going to play cello again. He played with us in November, so he might play on a few songs. So it'll be mostly acoustic. My bass is acoustic, and a lot of harmonies.
Wondering how it would be to sit here forever in your company. I'm looking at everything brown and green, then your darkness somewhere between. Lovely girl, sit by me, take my love for all it may be. I'm looking at everything, good and bad, thinking the best things sometimes sad, sometimes sad. Only the first time I'd seen her, won't be the last time I'll be here. Rita, the fireflies and me. Wondering how would it be to know you forever and for you to know me. Leaves are stirring, they're still hanging on. You are a beauty, I hope you live long. I hope you fireflies and me. Rita, the fireflies and me.
This is the work show on WGXC. My name is Paul Smart and we are speaking with Rachel Loshack. To continue.
The first things I remember are playing the violin when I was three.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember all those pieces that I played when I was three off by heart, and I could play them for you. So that's my first musical experience. And then seeing my aunt perform in like Evita and Jesus Christ Superstar and Cats and Les Miserables and all those musicals that she was in the 70s and 80s that I got to go and see, and just completely blew me away. And that's what I wanted to be. But my shy...
Mm-hmm.
made that not really practical, you know. Now my brother was a jazz pianist, so I used to sing a lot of jazz tunes with him, but I'm not really a jazz singer. I think, again, to be a jazz singer you have to have a certain amount of confidence, and mm-hmm. I don't think I had that at that time, and I don't know how I got the confidence to do what I'm doing now from that, but somehow it switched. And I think, you know, playing a lot of classical piano and violin, and I love the sound of many voices. I've actually started a vocal group, and we did a concert at Christmas at the farm across the road at Lidscar Farm. That was a really just, we packed her living room full of 40 or 50 people and families, and we did a four-part harmony Christmas carols, like traditional English Christmas carols. We had mince pies and all kind of mulled wine and things like that. And just celebrating the sounds of voices together has always really inspired me. And I really enjoyed singing in choirs and doing a cappella things. And actually this summer, I'm going to be doing leading a retreat in Montana with a local Wendy Kagan, who writes for Chronogram. Mm-hmm. She's does the community yoga class. She and I are running a retreat with our friend who's a massage therapist. And I'm going to be teaching song, and we're going to have song experience workshops every day of the retreat, and Wendy will teach two yoga classes a day. We'll be in the mountains in Montana. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I'm starting to maybe go back to that in my life.
Uh-huh.
When I did it much more when I was younger. I also grew up from probably age three listening to the Beatles probably non-stop,
mm-hmm.
100 times a week or whatever, and mostly the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
and some Rolling Stones and Chicago, some whatever records my dad had, the Animals and things like that, but I think I was more influenced by those kinds of things. So 60s music, and then musicals in the 70s.
And then the classical underpinning.
And then the classical, yeah.
Now, when you came to the city, you played at the Living Room for many years,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And how was that experience? Did that
well,
have
it was
an
amazing.
Effect on things? Or?
Yeah. Well, because when I arrived in New York, Chennai was still open on 8th Street, mm-hmm. which was the place to play it then. And I heard several bands play there, but I just started playing just as it closed. So I never played there myself. And then the Living Room opened up right after Chennai, shortly after Chennai closed down. So the atmosphere of the Living Room was kind of emulating the atmosphere at Chennai, but I was there just right from the beginning of it, playing every month or several times a month. And there was a lot of sense of community, I think, with the people that were all playing there at that time. We all used to organize nights where we would all play each other's songs, to cover each other's songs. There'd be like 8, 10, or 12 of us, and we'd each cover someone else's song and play with each other. And there was a lot of camaraderie and community that I really enjoyed being a part of. And all the musicians played with all the other people, and I really loved it. And then Ann Morgan got the job as sound engineer then, and that's how we met. Yeah, but I was already playing there by then.
And there were several scenes like that, weren't there? I mean, there was the Living Room, and didn't the Mercury kind of have its own
Mercury Lounge, yeah. Mercury Lounge is more band. Well, yeah, I guess the Living Room is more acoustic, and the Mercury mm-hmm. Lounge is a little more sound, bigger with a bigger sound. And Arlene Grocery, I played at the Mercury Lounge a lot. I loved playing there. The sound was really, really good, and it felt amazing being mm-hmm. on the stage there. And the Living Room that is just recently closed, and the sound guy there, Steve Haar, that took over from Morgan when Morgan stopped working there, it's like he's been running my sound now as long as Morgan had, and I can go there and play at the Living Room, and Steve Haar just probably presses a Rachel Loschek preset button and, and knows exactly how to make my voice sound and how to give me on the stage what I need to just sing the best I could possibly ever hope to sing. I had some amazing concerts at the Living Room that I just feel like I found my voice, and they were great at nurturing and giving people the space and the mm-hmm. beautiful sounding space to do it in. It was really amazing.
Are there replacements coming up? Is there a new scene?
Yeah, there might well be, but because I don't live there, it's hard. I mean, the Rockwood Music Hall, I've played a few times, but I haven't enjoyed the sound there so much, but I think if I played there regularly, I would get more used to it. But I think you really need to be in the city to build an audience, and I had that for a long time. And leaving the city and then not playing for a number of years, I don't know that I have the audience in the city right now, mm-hmm. and I'm just focusing on building it up again here with people that... The other thing for me is all the people that we've met doing Gusta for over the last 5 to 8 years that didn't even know that I was a singer necessarily, and now hearing my music for the first time and really enjoying it, and that's a really great experience for me. And friends that we've made up here since we moved here that never heard me play before, and playing all these shows and getting to play for people, and also the musical community here is pretty incredible, like with Liz Mitchell and Amy Helm, playing with them at the Barn a couple of times in the fall was just amazing for me. Great mm-hmm. experience. What more could you want? You know, musically, community-wise, it's such a great place to be. And Mike and Ruthie, mm-hmm. Ruthie, and those guys are just lovely. And they asked me this morning if I'd play at the Hoot on Saturday. So I go to my class, then come to do a concert at the Hoot, and then Morgan will play there as well on Saturday. He's doing a Gustav show at the Winter Hoot. So,
oh, great. It'll be fun.
Life comes busy, whether even if I try not to make it busy, too busy. It's
and then, busy. Lastly, as we lead into a piece of music, how does love fuel everything?
Well, for me, it does fuel musically. It fuels a lot because that's where your heart is, isn't it? And so if you didn't feel love, I don't know if you could love music, would you? You don't, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think all my songs are about love. And that is, it's not, love isn't always very easy, is it? So It's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. You can have very dark songs about love and just pure happiness comes from that too. I'm thinking of Valentine's Day. My son is Harvey Valentine. He's named after my grandmother, who was born on Valentine's Day, and she's called Valentine. So I always feel like Morgan got into trouble once because I told him that I didn't need flowers, I didn't need stuff on Valentine's Day. It's more for me about my grandmother, and that's my other grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And so he didn't get me anything one year. He didn't even... Not that he didn't get me anything, he didn't even do anything. And that was the mistake. I really don't care about Valentine's Day specifically. I feel like it's really important to, if you love someone, you just show them that you love them. And it doesn't matter when you do that, as long as you do it at some point during mm-hmm. the year. It shouldn't just be on one day. But it's, I love what I'm doing. I love doing music. And I need to do it though. It's an expression of stuff that I find hard to talk about. I mean, I could tell you what every song is about, but it wouldn't be very easy.
How about at this point we play a song?
Okay, I can play one just here by me.
Yeah. Why don't you do it, and then we'll do another upstairs and. Now I have lots of material that I can whittle down.
Yeah.
You ever seen a bass quite like this? It's beautiful.
Right, I just got the strings redone. It's in tune enough, I think. Was there one from the new record that you made for? This time last year, he went through a few weeks of just being devastated at being dropped off at school out of the blue. And mm-hmm. at nearly 5 years old, suddenly he just couldn't deal with it. And I think, Morgan was away on tour a lot, and we were all struggling quite a bit, and this was his expression of that. But I had to, just leave him there, bawling his eyes out, and the teacher was like, "It's just better if you just go." It was just a bit heartbreaking, so this is about that.
He's onto mine.
thinking that if my grandma stayed alive to see what I do now, she might stop yelling at me to look at the audience, because I feel like that's just not...
Not part of that
it's
song.
It's not, no.
Yeah. Maybe you should do Apple Tree, too.
Okay. Well, this is Apple Tree. I grew up on an apple farm, and it was that grandmother that... that was her business, her life, was this apple farm. But... Words don't come easy, sitting here alone in the cold. Here on the mountain, it's starting to snow. I left my family down there in the house on the hill. They may just find me, there's time for them still. I won't leave you hanging on. I know you need me to be strong. I'm not the hero fighting for life in my dreams. I'm just a person who wants to so sure that I know how it's all supposed to be. When I was small, I thought by now I'd be me. I won't fall far from the apple tree. I'll come back when I find that piece of me. I feel the cold, but I can't let go. I don't recall who's to blame at all. I just know I fell for. I searched the mountain, looking for the peace in the snow. I'm not certain how far I would go. On the way down, I'm feeling all the hope in the world. I asked for help and everybody heard. I asked for help and everybody heard. I won't fall far from the apple tree. I'll come back when I find that piece of me. That piece of me.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
This has been the February edition of The Work Show, and today we have been speaking with singer-songwriter Rachel Loshack, who performs at the Kleinert James Art Center in Woodstock this Sunday, February 16th. My name is Paul Smart. Music for this edition has been by Miss Loshack, as well as her husband Morgan Taylor. Until next month, keep on working.